This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Where was HR when all of this was happening?
You pointed out what company, right? So this is basically HR doing P. Diddy's bidding. HR equals hell racket. Nobody did anything. It is the playbook. Powerful people over less fortunate people.
The jury is watching you buck naked, or maybe he had a burqa on. And they're all looking over at him. What can he do? What did he do?
I'll tell you what he did. He actually looked like he was a little bit proud. It was odd. It seemed like he was proud of what the jurors saw. And I literally sat there and said, that man has not learned a thing.
Hotel nights would last up to 30 hours.
The freak-offs weren't just like bam, 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 thank you, ma'am. Positions held for 3-4 hours. Ouch, I'd want to go see the chiropractor, a cracked out Loki in the Marvel Universe.
Hold that position, arch your back. What, breathe in, what? Straight out to Tisa Tells, joining us at the Monahan Federal Courthouse, where Sean Combs is being tried on a multi-count federal indictment. Tisa, the star of Tisa Tales on YouTube. Tisa, what is the latest?
Nancy, today was an incredible day for the prosecution. They are this close to resting their case, but there were a couple of bombshells put out. First of all, Brian still did his best to create Fulton County magic, basically trying to get us into the whole lifestyle. Apparently, if you're working on an album, apparently, if you're working toward a goal, it doesn't matter if you break the law. That's right, the defense put out its, I guess his whole thing, that this is a lifestyle. Unfortunately, they seem to forget that it was illegal. And one of the most shocking moments, they asked Brendan Paul whether he thought his boss was a criminal. They asked whether they thought his boss was involved in crime. They literally asked them, do you think you're a criminal? However, what was their conclusion? According to Brendan Paul, absolutely not. Mr. Paul, are you forgetting how you came to be in this place? Because I feel like we need to roll it back like Freaky Friday. How did you end up here? You were arrested with drugs at the Opa-locka airport while you were about to get on a plane, a private plane, with your boss in the course of business and transport drugs that your boss left the night before in his apartment. Now, I might not be the greatest legal mind ever, but I'm pretty sure in the United States of America, you have just admitted to plenty of crimes. Imagine a man that is on the stand because you had to take immunity for doing illegal stuff, sitting there talking about what a great man he was. And he only maybe bought 500 in drugs here, 1,000 in hair. Sir, what about the 5,000 in weed? Again, a lot of people were scratching their heads and a lot of people were looking at Brian Steele saying, you did all this because you were working on an album, which by the way, flopped. You guys, Brian Steele was telling bedtime stories and fairy tales. He needs to write for Disney and Pixar because the story he was trying to paint was not grounded in reality. The defense promised at the beginning of this trial that they might go to the 18th. They had the whole world. They were going to show it's a lifestyle. Instead, they showed that Brian Steele, Westmoreland, Mark Agnifilio, Tenny Garagos, and of course, Xavier Donaldson need to work for Disney Pixar because they were writing bedtime stories mixed with a little fairy tale. You guys, but it looks like the defense, in a shocking turn of events, has admitted defeat or at the very least, an ungrounded confidence. They went from saying that their whole trial is going to be 5 days for them to put on their defense case. They have now shortened that down to 1, maybe 2 days. Now listen, a lot of people gasped in the courtroom. 1 to 2 days, sir, you know you've lost the crowd. Because the first thing I thought is, Kanye gonna testify? You know you've lost the crowd, or even Kanye West has decided it's not a good idea for him to get on the stand. There is not enough time for anybody to testify. Again, what does this mean? It means that some people think that Diddy might get off because he's overconfident. But again, pride goes before the fall. Where is the defense? Where are all these celebrities that were going to testify on his behalf? Where are all the employees that are going to testify it was just a lifestyle and they knew nothing? It's very, very telling. Some people see this confidence. I see it as a red flag that the prosecution has proven their case without a shred of doubt. Again, where are all these employees that can testify it wasn't a criminal organization? Where are all these employees refuting what the prosecution witnesses said? Again, it's a bold move. We'll see what it means. But
Tisa, how did Sean Combs respond?
Listen, today, this is Diddy's worst week ever. Diddy was begging for juror number 7 to be kicked off. They even started some nonsense asking about to inquire into the medical records about the juror that could not be there on Wednesday. Now, I'm not going to lie, Nancy. Part of me said, I hope that juror gets better, but can they maybe be sick on Friday too so we could get a 5-day week? As you see, that did not happen. However, it did create another opportunity. We were also happy to see Diddy literally got all of his motions rejected. And that secret phone that Diddy tried to hide from the prosecutors that they are going to look at for a possible obstruction of justice charge was admitted in evidence. Okay? So a lot of crushing defeats to Diddy. You have the jurors, you have the jury stays diverse, but Diddy just got bad news upon bad news. But as it stands, and we know with the Diddy trial, things change daily, the jurors that we have are going to be the one to go to deliberation, which, by the way, Diddy's team has informed us that they're not even going to put on a 5-day defense. They're going to be done in 1 to 2 business days. You guys, again, some people are saying this is a sign that Diddy thinks they've proven their case. I see it as a sign of desperation. Or maybe Diddy says, it's over and I don't want to have to pay you guys another moment. I don't want to pay you guys for another moment. Because again, Diddy literally paid millions of dollars in order for people to try to make rotten zucchini into something. We're not talking lemons and a lemonade. We're talking rotten zucchini. And what do you do with that? Well, according to most cooks, just like Diddy's career, his life, and his chance of freedom, it looks like it just got tossed in the trash.
Joining us now outside the Monahan Courthouse in downtown Manhattan, Lauren Conlon, star of Pop Crime TV on YouTube. Lauren, thank you for being with us. Lauren, I understand that there was so much baby oil at a freak-off. We have already heard about 2 slip and falls. Listen, Lauren.
Jonathan Perez is Sean Combs' 4th assistant to take the stand with immunity. Perez testifies that he worked directly under Christina Corum, who instructed him on setting up King Nights, which Corum described as Combs' private time with a woman. Perez says the task was usually left to the night staff, and he only set up for about 5 of these nights. Perez even had to purchase lingerie for Jane for the King Nights. Perez says he cleaned up the messy rooms afterward, and they were often covered in oil. Replying to Corum about how a cleanup was going, Perez texted, "Slipped and fell twice already." Perez says Combs also sent him to pick up drugs.
Okay. Objection. Ew. What happened? The guys had 2 slip and falls in all the oil?
Yes, unfortunately, that is what we saw in evidence when we saw these text messages between Christina Corum and Jonathan Perez, one of Diddy's assistants. We also saw a text message from Christina Corum to Jane, actually, stating that the rooms that she and Diddy would use, there always would be extra damage charges because they were all white and more oil spilled than normal. So it's been a bit stomach-turning, Nancy.
Joining us now outside the Monahan Courthouse is Tisa Tells. Tisa, I understand that Sean Combs has been, first of all, he tried the Bible. Okay, then I guess his lawyers told him, that's not a good idea. You need to stop that right now. Reading the Bible in front of the jury. Now, if he had any history of ever going to church or reading the Bible in the past, it might not have been a bad move, but using the Bible as a prop, I'm surprised he wasn't struck by a bolt of lightning. That said, now he's got a new book he's bringing into court, The Magic of Believing. Now, if I'm right, that's all about manifesting your truth, like manifesting a not guilty? Is this real?
It is actually real. He has some sort of manifestation book. But again, with each week, at this point, I think he's going to bring in a guide to the dark arts from Hogwarts if we let him keep going. He is sliding down the walls. And the thing is, he keeps trying to bring in these props. To me, the Bible, perfect prop for him, okay? Like you said, you're about to have thunder and lightning in the courtroom. Now he's all about manifesting. He's trying to remind us of the brainwashing he gave the nation for the last 10 years and bring that in. But at this point, it's turned into a joke, which makes me believe how much is our legal team actually monitoring social media, because this has turned into a joke. Again, what is he going to bring in? What is he going to bring in next? How to make friends and win enemies? I mean, no one really knows what's going on. So again, Diddy is trying his best to turn this into a circus, but the judge has a firm hold on the courtroom and he's letting it know this is going to be above board. So he's struggling. He's definitely struggling.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Sean Combs in the courtroom manifesting a not guilty verdict. Listen.
Is Sean Diddy Combs trying to manifest a not guilty verdict? The music mogul has been spotted carrying a self-help book, The Magic of Believing, back and forth to court. Legal experts say it isn't uncommon for defendants to turn to some sort of coping mechanism during lengthy and stressful trials, and Combs' book of choice is used by many for mental fortitude in challenging situations.
Dr. Bethany, manifesting. For those of us that aren't really familiar with that, could you explain what it is? Is it like, wish it and it comes true?
Like I dream of genie? Manifesting is this idea that if you form a thought in your mind, you can materialize it in the environment. So let's say you want to be an actress. You meditate and you imagine yourself being in front of the camera, being happy, enjoying being, getting your next Oscar. And that if you can sum it up enough feelings about that event, then you can rearrange sort of what's going on in the environment to make that event happen. I mean, whether or not this is true, okay? So, P. Diddy controls
his
victims.
Did you actually just say whether or not this is true?
Okay, whether
I did you say that? Because I think you did. Whether it's not true. How about going to school and getting a job to advance your goal? What about what are you? Okay, please tell me you don't tell your clients to manifest. Sit there and wish it and it will happen.
Okay. So just like P. Diddy tries to control his victims, I think he's trying to control God. I mean, it's like he's trying to go to the universe get his wishes met.
Bethany, please, unless we really need to drag God into this, let's please leave him, her out of it. Just first of all, you evaded the question. Do you tell your clients to manifest?
I do not, but many of my Beverly Hills clients come in with a goal they're trying to manifest. So I try to turn it into real life, actualization, meaning acting on their own behalf to reach the goal. Nancy,
okay, now you're losing me. You're totally losing me in all the words. Words. Okay, thank goodness you don't tell your clients to manifest. Okay, Sydney Sumner, what does Kanye and his $1 million titanium teeth drool have to do with Sean Combs?
Well, Nancy, Kanye West has been one of the only public supporters of Diddy throughout this thing. And it's interesting because they weren't really close before this. Sean Combs and Kanye West kind of had a falling out over Kanye's White Lives Matter t-shirt line. And they haven't really been close since then. But now that Sean Combs is behind bars, Kanye West has apparently been reaching out to his sons and offering support. And we saw that devolve from pushing Sean John merchandise on his website to selling swastika t-shirts on his website in this tirade that kind of unfolded during Super Bowl week.
Oh, yes. Let's take a look at the swastika t-shirt. Back to Troy Slayton joining us, veteran trial lawyer out of L.A. Troy Slayton, I mean, with friends like this, why would they bring Kanye to court? A known Hitler sympathizer.
I don't think Diddy's defense team had anything to do with this. I think Kanye did this on his own because he's selling free Diddy merchandise. If I was Diddy's defense team, I'm not calling in Kanye West with his swastikas and his Heil Hitler merchandise. Absolutely not. I think Kanye did this absolutely on his own because he's trying to sell merch. He's trying to make money off all the free publicity surrounding this trial.
Tory Slayton, it cannot help Sean Combs. Not that I want him to be helped, but it can't help Sean Combs for Kanye to show up. I don't know if the jurors even realized what was happening, but it's done now. Can I ask you very quickly, Tory Slayton, I want to circle back to the chaos in the courtroom surrounding juror number 6, okay? And will that be reversible error if there's a conviction? Could you explain why, whether he's black, white, purple, or green, that juror had to go?
Well, I understand why the judge dismissed them, but I also understand why it's going to be fertile ground for appeal, because there's this little thing in this country called the Constitution, and the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment says everybody has to be treated equal, and how that applies to this trial is that you can't dismiss somebody because of their race. You can't. And so if the jurors,
Slayton,
I mean, if the prosecutor,
Slayton,
yes, Nancy,
hold on.
If the prosecutors,
we all
if the prosecutors
accept
got rid of them
that
because of his color.
We all accept that a juror cannot be thrown off or thrown out of the voir dire process because of their race. Batson v. Kentucky, it's an age old case, right? We all know that. This juror was placed on the jury. He was not deselected because of his race. But, Troy, he stated he doesn't live in the jurisdiction. He can't
Maybe.
Be on the jury. You can't waive somebody.
Answers.
You can't waive that constitutional right.
They didn't even give him a chance
what?
To explain, Nancy. They kicked him out. He gave inconsistent
no, yes,
answers.
Did.
At one point, he said he lived in New Jersey. The other point, he said he lived in the Bronx. So it's not clear exactly where he lived. Or if he moved
okay,
during the trial.
Okay, let's get some clarification very quickly. Sidney Sumner, what exactly did he say? Please school Troy Slayton.
Nancy, the judge said that the issue of race could not outweigh the fact that this juror was possibly lying or trying to stay on this panel. The juror was very unclear in whether or not he actually resided in New Jersey or if he resided in the Bronx full time. And that inconsistency led the judge to believe that this juror was not being truthful because he wanted to stay on the panel. And the juror should not be that invested in the case unless he had some kind of bias toward it. So the judge said, I'm sorry, but
what were his words exactly, Sidney? Where did he say he lived?
Well, at first, on his jury questionnaire, this juror answered that he lived in the Bronx with his aunt. Then, in casual conversation with court staff, he was talking about living in New Jersey with his girlfriend and his daughter. So when it came back again, he told the judge, no, I spend most of my time in the Bronx. So we have this constant inconsistency of, well, you said this, now you said that, now you said this again, so I don't understand what is the truth here? And at that point, he just could not be trusted.
Joining us now outside the Monahan Federal Courthouse, where Sean Combs is on trial in a multi-count federal indictment for sex trafficking and RICO, standing by Lauren Conlon, star of Pop Crime TV on YouTube. Lauren, thank you for being with us. Lauren, what do you make of what just went down in the courtroom?
Today in court, the government started with their first witness being Brendan Paul. Brendan Paul was a former personal assistant for Sean Combs. And if you recall, Brendan Paul was actually arrested at a Miami airport in March of 2024. And the media had essentially dubbed Brendan Paul as this quote unquote alleged drug mule. Now, Brendan Paul only had about 0.07 grams of cocaine on him, and he actually explained to us in the gallery and to the jury that he was cleaning up one of Sean Combs' hotel rooms and he found it laying around. He took it with him and then he just forgot to take it out of his pocket. He later told us that he had a great lawyer and his lawyer was able to get these charges dropped, but he never told anyone, never told law enforcement who the cocaine belonged to, and he never talked to Sean Combs after this arrest, and he really hadn't seen him until he testified today. Now, Brendan Paul's background, he worked for Combs Enterprises as a personal assistant from 2022 to March of 2024 after his arrest, about 18 months. And this kid was actually a D1 walk-on basketball player for Syracuse. Now, he testified that he wanted to be in the music industry, and he was pretty excited about this opportunity to work for Sean Combs. His duties really included tasks like packing Diddy's suitcases, organizing things, cleaning up his studio after he was done, and he testified that he only set up these quote-unquote Wild King nights a handful of times. He also testified that he did get drugs for Diddy between 5 and 10 times. However, he said it most likely was less than 10 times, and he would do this through other assistants. He would text them to see what Diddy needed, or he would do it through KK, and very rarely would he do it through Sean Combs himself. He also talked about seeing Jane very frequently, and he would set up these King nights for Diddy and Jane. And during Brian Steele's cross-examination, Steele said to him, "Did you speak to Jane after these Wild King nights?" And he said yes. And then Brian Steele would ask, "Did she seem like she was regretful or she didn't want to be there? Did you sense anything like that from her?" And Brendan Paul's answer was absolutely not. Brendan Paul also spoke about an occasion where Diddy had asked him to try a drug for him, and he wanted him to try it so he could see if it was good or not. And Brendan Paul said that he did this, but he did this because he wanted to be loyal to Diddy.
We are live at the Monahan Federal Courthouse where Sean Combs, a.k.a. Diddy, and many other names, is on trial, facing prosecution in a multi-count federal indictment, including charges for sex trafficking and RICO. Joining me at the courthouse, Tisa Tells, investigator and star of Tisa Tells on YouTube. I understand the judge is furious about a leak. A leak, Tisa. What happened?
Guys, what happened in the courtroom today shocked everybody. Judge Aaron is done playing nice. He went in there with his cloak flying behind him like he was Lord Voldemort coming to Hogwarts. He literally accused the defense counsel and a little bit the prosecution, accused them of lying and leaking information that could only been available to the people in a sealed courtroom. It was incredible. On top of that, Diddy's team said that they're going to rest their case in 2 to 5 trial days. I don't even know what that means. However, there was a leak that actually came out from people that were in a closed seal courtroom. The only people there were the defense and the prosecution. The issue was an article. There was an article that was actually published. The judge hinted that it was last night. He didn't tell us what it was. And he said the source of the article had to be one of the parties because, again, it was a closed courtroom. Nobody was supposed to know about it. And it was under federal court ordered. Now, again, the prosecution was like, "It's not us, Your Honor." However, the judge literally hammered Mark Agnifilio, the lead counsel for Diddy, saying, "When did you find out about this article?" Mark Agnifilio sat there, stumbling over his words. Then the judge said, "But when were you made aware?" He still didn't know. Finally, he said, "Oh, we think when the prosecution sent it to us." Maureen Comey literally looked like, "What do you mean, we?" They were caught flat-footed. They didn't have any excuses. The judge finally said, "Listen, do you know what's going to happen? Moving forward," first of all, he said he has the right to open up an investigation. He said this is serious. He said, "Moving forward, if this happens again, they will literally seize phones. They will conduct a thorough investigation. They will literally question all parties under penalty of perjury, and they will get to the bottom of those leaks." He said, "Moving forward, though, he is putting the defense and prosecution," but everybody knew he was talking to the defense, "on on notice that if any leaks come out of their camp, if anything is signed off on and anything escapes, then they are holding the lead prosecutor or defense attorney accountable for anything that happens in their camp. Judge Aaron means business. It was shocking what happened in the courtroom.
You do not want to be the source of a leak, and you don't want anybody on your team to be responsible. And that goes right down to the law clerks and the summer interns that may have Xeroxed papers or handed over discovery, because it reflects on you. And once you lose your credibility in the courtroom, technical legal term, you're screwed. End of story. Now, we just heard from Tisa Tales joining us at the courthouse that the defense has now dropped their own bomb, stating they're only going to put up 2 to 5 days of defense witnesses. Straight out to Brian Fitzgibbons joining us, Director Operations USPA Nationwide Security. He leads a team of investigators. Brian, welcome back. Thank you for being with us. You and I have been in a lot of cases. You as a witness, me as the prosecutor. The defense always does it. Sadly, it took me about 10 years to catch on to it. I would always believe them when they would say, oh, we're going to be at least 2 or 3 weeks. And it never was 2 or 3 weeks. But I would always take them at their word and arrange my rebuttal witnesses to come to town or to show up at the courthouse in 2 or 3 weeks. And then suddenly they go, oh, no, yeah, it's just going to be like 2 days. And it's a way to catch the state flat-footed. But I think it's also, again, pardon the pun, puffing up when you make your case to be more substantial than it really is going to be. Have you ever, and all the times you've testified, Fitzgibbons, seen the defense put on the length of a case they promise up front? Ever?
No, I think you make a great point, Nancy, that what the defense is going to do here is, you know, they've used their private investigators and they're going to present a simple, short case to promote reasonable doubt, right? To keep it simple for the jury and point out where there are flaws in the prosecution's case and provide that reasonable doubt.
The worst Netflix and chill in the world.
200 bottles of baby oil and 900 bottles of Astro Glide.
Hold it right there. Arch your back. Breathe in.
Rhino pills.
He's in control of everything.
Beat her and subjected her to 3 male escorts.
She was the sex slave.
He's asking for his very own Dateline special. I just want to wash my mouth out with Listerine, with Lysol, with rubbing alcohol, after I talk about the Sean Combs case. And I suspect some of the jurors feel the same way, because when they were watching the state's exhibit Triple X, the freak-off videos, they were actually turning away from the monitor, wincing visibly, hiding their faces. Do you blame them? But now, Merry Freak-Off Christmas, everybody.
Special Agent Penland also reads texts from January 2013 where Combs asks Cassie Ventura if she wants to celebrate a late Christmas with a 4-man freak-off. Combs texted Ventura word for word, "Want to celebrate Christmas and have a freak-off tomorrow or Friday?" Ventura then got to work hiring the men with staggered arrivals for January 11th and 12th, reaching out to 3 men personally and arranging for the 4th from an escort service.
Dr. Bethany Marshall. Again, I need a shrink and a drink. But since I'm a teetotaler, I'll have to settle for just a shrink. Did you hear that, guys? Bethany Marshall, Dr. Bethany Marshall, joining us out of the LA jurisdiction. She is the author of Deal Breaker. You can see her now on Peacock, and you can find her at drbethanymarshall.com. Did you hear that? Merry Christmas. You want to celebrate a late Christmas with me? With a 4-man freak-off? In other words, you have sex with 4 sex workers?
You know, Nancy, I hear somebody who's compulsive and addicted. In terms of compulsivity, sex addiction, one of the things we know about sex addiction is that the thoughts of sex or whatever the fetishized view of sex is become so prominent in the perpetrator's mind that they often can't focus. Often they can't even hold down a job, or they present as somebody with attention deficit disorder because their mind keeps drifting to sex. And then in terms of addiction, you know, we think of sex as driving these freak-offs, but there's so much drugs involved. And I hear in the testimony that he'll say, you know, I'll be up for 24 hours or 48 hours, or there's some chatter back and forth in the text about that. And to me, Nancy, I think methamphetamine, I mean, that's the one drug that could keep somebody up for that many days. And we know with methamphetamine, especially in homicide, there's often overkill. So if he already likes power and violence and he's on meth, that's even going to ratchet it up a level. And Nancy, real quickly, the jurors wincing. Wincing is an instinctual response to loss of life. It's like seeing a plane fall out of the sky, or a big dog barking, or a spider, or someone ejected from a car. If they are wincing, they're not just viewing sex, they're viewing battery. What is being done to these women? Are they being sodomized? Are they being chained in compromising positions? Are they so out of it they don't know what's happening to them? Are they being whipped? I would be so curious to know, what are they seeing that is life-threatening?
The way you just said that, Dr. Bethany, it's overwhelming. It really is. Because those videos are placing the jurors at the freak-offs. And Lynn Shaw joining me, founder, director of Lynn's Warriors, an organization committed to ending sex trafficking and sex abuse of women and girls. When I say the words freak-off, it's like eating a dirt sandwich. Freak-off, hotel night, king night. Wow, that's certainly airbrushing the whole scenario, putting perfume on the pig. It's torture. It's sex abuse. It's coerced rape. Mm-hmm. Freak-off? That sounds like it could be a music festival. Hotel night? That sounds like a fun getaway, right? Where the twins and I would camp out on the bed and order room service. Woo! Right? And king night? It's anything but that for the victims.
Has anyone heard of sexual servitude? This is part with the justice system now. We are working into sex trafficking. It is coercion. It is force. It is fraud. Sexual servitude. We've seen the testimony. We've heard. They were forced into this. They were under the influence. They were threatened with their lives. Family members were threatened. We've heard so much. This Dirty Diddy Freak Fest is a great big F you, not only to all of us, but to all of the alleged victims of his, and to all of the victims of any sort of sexual exploitation and abuse across America, across the globe. And you know what? This is his playbook. I keep going back to thinking he's smiling. He's thinking he won, because you know what? His playbook is money talks, crime walks. I'm very concerned about this, because we've got to think about, and we're not talking enough about them, the victims. Where is this Christina Corum? I've been asking for weeks now. Is she going to testify? If she is, she isn't. We don't know. Why isn't she testifying? She is the right hand. We have proof. We have text messages. She knew about this. We need more information. But you know what? The women, the bottom line here is all of these alleged victims, survivors of this Dirty Diddy degenerate, their lives will never be the same. We may never know names, hear from them. Their lives are ruined, because you know what? You don't get over abuse like this. But I want everybody to know about sexual servitude equals sex trafficking.
If somehow he pulls out a not guilty verdict, he is going to be hell on wheels.
Okay, I don't like when you say if he's found not guilty, he's going to be hell on wheels, because I'm totally getting my car bombed. Like Kid Cudi. Yeah, there's no coming back from the itty bitty ditty and the ditty wand. I've got them all here. Yeah, he's going to come after me.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Straight out to Tisa Tells, joining us at the Monahan Federal Courthouse, where Sean Combs is being tried on a multi-count federal indictment.
Tisa, the star of Tisa Tales on YouTube. Tisa, what is the latest?
The government is this close to resting their case. Brendan Paul is this close to testifying and putting the final screws in on Diddy's whole RICO operation. And also, people are saying he's going to pull KK into the fray too. Yes, Diddy's Jeffrey Epstein will have his Ghislaine Maxwell name Christina Quorum. But why is this so odd? Because first of all, yes, I thought the same thing you did. Where was Diddy when this happened? That's right, he's locked up in the MDC. However, you couldn't write this. Diddy's team, in an astonishing move, the judge asks, does anybody have any objection to the juror coming back on Friday? The prosecution, no objection, Your Honor. Diddy, well, Yana, we need to talk to our client. We all said, what do you need to talk about? The juror has assured the judge that he will be fine from his vertigo and be back Friday morning, okay? Diddy's team then confirmed and said they wanted a sidebar because they have further questions about medical. Now, why is this so important? Well, think about it. Diddy has been trying his best to make a connection with jurors. He wanted juror number 6 to stay. He wants juror number 7 out. I think it's fair to assume that he does not have that special connection with juror number 7. However, if they can get this third juror out on medical grounds, because it's almost a home stretch, if they get sick again, who knows? Then this alternate, and whoever it is, Diddy must also think he has a special connection with. He can pull that alternate down, and he thinks he can increase his chances, if not for a not guilty verdict, because let's be real, that's not happening, but pull it in so that he can actually get this mistrial that he has been begging and waiting, or at the very least, have better grounds for an appeal. So why is this so shocking? Well, for one, Judge Aaron has yet to tell us what's going on with juror number 7. Again, Judge Aaron has been exceedingly fair. He is expected to rule on juror number 7 on Friday. That's if this mysterious sick juror actually comes in. Again, Diddy has made it very clear who he thinks he has a special connection with. And today, he put the wheels in motion to try to find some medical ground to strike this juror out and to pull this alternate that Diddy has his eyes set on. Again, a lot of court intrigue, a lot going on. We hope the juror is okay, but for right now, we are waiting in bated breath for what the judge decides on juror number 7. And if Diddy's team was able to find a medical excuse to dismiss this third juror and pull in that alternate that Diddy has been making googly eyes at.
Joining us now outside the Monahan Federal Courthouse, Lauren Conlon, investigative reporter and star of Pop Crime TV on YouTube. Lauren, thank you for being with us. Witness after witness, excruciating detail after excruciating detail, multiple motions for mistrial by the defense. What do you make of it?
Yes, I think I speak for everyone here. We are very relieved to be moving on and having the defense start their case in chief. I think a lot of people are anxious for the witness list as well. We've already learned of a couple witnesses, and I believe the first witness will be a Bad Boy employee who is in charge of HR. The government has inferred numerous times that the Bad Boy HR department wasn't necessarily quote unquote real, that they just did more of Sean Combs's bidding. So I guess we'll wait and see when this person takes the stand. And Nancy, there seems to be a lot going on behind the scenes as well. The judge has been not super happy with the defense and the government, as information has seemed to be leaked to the press. I mean, it's been never a dull moment here.
Philip Dubay, everybody hates HR. I mean, is there anybody on the panel that likes HR, human resources? When you see the human resources lady coming down the hall, everybody goes, oh no, who did what wrong now? Somebody did. So Dubay, I don't know, calling HR as a star witness, is that wise? And plus, an HR witness from Bad Boy Records, who's been authorizing the, let's see, extortion payment. Correct me if I'm wrong, Lauren Conlon and Sydney Summer, the extortion payment to Cassie Ventura's mother, where they wanted $20,000 and the quid pro quo was not leaking orgy videos, freak-off videos of their daughter who was just starting in her music career. That was through Bad Boy Records. All the cash that flowed through them that the sex workers were paid with, the buying the drugs by Bad Boy employees. I mean, you're putting up a Bad Boy HR person? That cross-examination, ouch. I mean, is that the way to kick a case off, Dubé, as one of your star witnesses?
Of course it is. One of the best kept secrets about HR in every corporation, in every business throughout America, is they're there to protect the company. They don't really care about employee interests. As a practical matter, they do damage control, risk management, and they try to assess what, if anything, that's getting reported to them, or what, if anything, they've observed could put the company at risk of liability. So they're not going to say or do anything that could harm the company, because that's where their loyalty lies.
Okay, you're still pretending that this is a company instead of Sean Combs' alter ego. To Dr. Bethany Marshall joining us, renowned psychoanalyst out of the L.A. jurisdiction, author of Deal Breakers. You can see her on Peacock and find her at drbethanymarshall.com. Why does everybody hate HR?
You know, Nancy, most of my patients who come in with major depressive disorder or sudden psychiatric symptoms, often they've gotten into trouble with their companies and HR has come in and confronted them. And Philip Dubé is right. HR is always on the side of the company. Although, as you pointed out, what company, right? So this is basically HR doing P. Diddy's bidding. But it's not a good idea. It's not a good look when you see HR coming down the hall. And also, when you get in trouble with HR, everybody else knows about it. And whenever I submit insurance claims, my patient's first question is, are they going to find out about this in HR? They're terrified of HR.
And you know, what's so interesting, I don't know, interesting is the right word. Let me say sham. Lynn Shaw joining me, founder, executive director, Lynn's Warriors, committed to ending sex trafficking and sex abuse of girls and women. Really? The head of HR in a sex trafficking case? Where was HR when all of this was happening?
Yeah, HR equals hell racket. Exactly, Nancy. Where were they when, in my opinion, this is nothing more than Bad Boy Worldwide Entertainment production company with their names splattered all over this skyscraper down the street from me here in New York, was doing all these things to these victims, alleged victims, and these women. Where were they to step in and say, hey, you know, if this was even a legitimate business, which I don't think it was at all, where you can't do this, Dirty Diddy, because this will affect business. And I use that loosely, business. You better stop with these women. You better clean up your act. Nobody did anything. This is such a criminal enterprise. I can clearly see it. It is the playbook. Vulnerable people, powerful people over less fortunate people. So this hell racket equals HR is a big zero. I bet you there was no office, no HR, no anything. You had one or two people that were there to protect Dirty Diddy and the enterprise, the criminal enterprise, in my opinion. So let's put the focus back on victims and survivors of this Dirty Diddy and all victims and survivors of sexual exploitation. Where's the HR companies for all of them? They do not exist. Dirty Diddy, done, going down. Hell racket. No HR in that big building down the street.
We are waiting as justice unfolds. Thank you to our guests, but especially to you for being with us. Nancy Grace, signing off. I'll see you tomorrow night, 6 and 9 o'clock sharp Eastern. And until then, good night, friend.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.